Hi, this is Mark Talbot. I post as Alt in a 20-foot radius.
Hi, this is Derek Myers. I post as Amaron at dungeonsmaster.com, and welcome to our podcast, Recounting Encounters,
a show where we talk about what happened at D&D Encounters this week. Okay, welcome everybody to D&D Encounters, Season 10, Session 5, Secrets Lies. This week, Derek and I talk to you about what happened at our gaming tables. How are you doing tonight, Derek?
Not too bad, not too bad. Yourself?
Not too bad at all. So this week was quite an interesting week. You've got a couple of things to tell. I have just a few things to tell. And basically it ended quite differently for both of us. So I guess I'll start just by saying that this map was quite compact, I guess you would say. If you did attend the session, then you noticed that it was kind of an A-frame type map. And basically, as you came along, so basically, you see, this was an A-frame type of encounter, and everything seemed to have clogged up over at the door. So what ends up happening is the party comes down and speaks with an assassin. And according to myself, this was probably just an information dump where the party shouldn't have got half the information that they got. But my party did interact a little bit. I happened to play the priestess at the table, and it was kind of more like hold up a hand, tell everybody to shut up, and let's listen what this guy has to say. Kind of try and get a little bit of information about Hoshtar, right? So the party hesitated. They just wanted to jump into combat right away because the guy insulted them with his rapier. He was basically picking his teeth with his rapier. And essentially what ended up happening is we found out a little bit of information about Hoshtar and that he's being held captive. And then all of a sudden my party for some reason didn't really like the fact that the assassin said, "Hey, you're not going anywhere. You're just going to be my prisoner forever and ever." And we attacked him. But basically he rolled a stellar initiative check, took an attack on the first guy, and then opened the door, and basically all the, what were they called again? Hex
they're
Knights.
They're Dark Creepers and Hex Knights, yeah. which are Dark Ones, which is a part of the Dark Creepers. They're like an advanced version of them.
So, yeah, so this battle ended up taking a long time for me, and the party with the blast, one of the creatures had quite a nice blast, had basically managed to neutralize the party at the door. And until the party decided to work together finally and take down one or two of the hex blades, it was quite a battle. It was just a back and forth swing, hack and slash, and the hex knights did so much damage. Unbelievable. The priestess went through two healing surges in the first two rounds. That was pretty much it for that. So when they got with the hex blades, the assassin decided to run around the corner, go down the stairs, and my encounter ended basically with the defeat of the Hex Knights and the Dark Creepers. The Dark Creepers were actually quite nasty with their daggers also. Most of my party was either very, very bloodied or you know, actually they were pretty much all bloodied. So going into it next week, what I've decided to do to modify the encounter, we could have had time to do it, but the encounter does call for Hoshtar to be held at knife point by this assassin with no real way of saving him. So what I decided to do is I'm going to make a skill challenge out of it for the PC to basically worm their way or basically try and distract him enough in order to take the knife away from his throat in order for him to be able to attack the assassin. So long and short, it wasn't, for myself personally, it wasn't a very great encounter. There wasn't enough room to move, all in all. We don't have any very mobile characters. They're kind of more face-to-face. Just the ranger, but he couldn't get through the door anyway. You can go through enemy squares, and they basically just block the door. So that was basically what happened at my table. Like I said, overall, not impressed with the encounter. What about you, Derek?
Well, I have a question for you first. What you mentioned that there was a priest, that you played the priestess. What else was your, like, how many people were at your table? What were they playing? It's the same group from the week before?
We were five this week, actually. We were two arcanists, one witch, an arcanist, ranger, paladin, and I decided to play the priestess for healing. Everybody else was some sort of striker class, controller, two controllers, and a defender with no leader, so I decided to pop a leader in there. I kind of took a look at the stats, and I looked at the damage output of these creatures, and I kind of figured that it's probably to their advantage that I actually play a leader. It was pretty tough, and yeah, so that's why I decided to play a priestess. So we were five at the table this week, including myself, and yeah, it was fun overall. It was just kind of a nonchalant encounter. I didn't like the fact that the whole information dump, you interact with this guy and you find out that he's part of this rogue underground group. You were telling me about it earlier. But yeah, wasn't impressed with this one so much.
See, and I had very different experience with this adventure. I ran this encounter twice, and I had a lot of fun both times. I felt that it worked really well. Now, in all fairness, though, I made significant changes both times. And I think we saw this last season as well. The encounters that tended to be problematic, that when run as printed, where I opted to make changes, we often ended up having a much better time. So I want to ask you before I go on to mine, though, did you adjust any of the monsters for your group? So you said you had a party of five. The encounters are generally built for a party of five. Did you lower any of the numbers or take away any of the monsters? Did you just run it as printed?
I was going to actually adjust the monster's damage. I was going to lower the damage, all in all. But I decided, since I was playing that fifth player, that, you know, I looked at it and I said, it'll be tough, but it'll be well worth it. I think it's the map itself that makes the encounter extremely difficult. The Hex Knights tend to just lock people down, period. Kind of like what a defender does for your own party. So, long and short, I did not make any significant changes. The only significant change I made is that I'm changing the interaction with the assassin and Hoshtar at the end. I'm making it into a skill challenge. And I guess we'll talk about this a little bit at the end of the podcast, where, you know, you kind of, we talked about the session six, which actually I didn't even take a look at before I decided I want to do the skill challenge. And you said that it'll probably play right into next week's adventure anyway, so
yeah,
I'm kind
yeah,
of
yeah I think it will yeah. We'll talk about that more after. I mean, let's not jump ahead too much.
True.
But I just want to catch on to something you said a minute ago. You said that you felt that the map was the thing that hurt this encounter, and it's funny you mention that, because that was really what I changed. So I ran the encounter twice. The first time I ran it was with my group that's higher level. So they started the adventure at level 4. They're level 5 now. So I've had to increase the difficulty, obviously, since the encounter's written for lower level characters. With that group, I had intentions of changing the map. And then when I got to the store, I realized I brought the wrong map with me. I had the one from last week. Which didn't have the lower level on it. So as much as I wanted to change the map, at that point I had no choice. I had to, because I didn't have a copy of it with me. So what I ended up doing was I used the same map from last week, so the upper level of the Council Spider's hideout, and I just used some basically like some rough paper I had with me and some other small obstacles, and I sort of covered up certain areas of the map. And then I just said to my group, like, use your imagination, and I described it. I made sure that it had more of those long – narrow tunnels that were only 2 squares wide, and other than that, I felt it still accomplished the same thing that this map did, and it worked really well. I played the Hex Knights and the Dark Creepers as very mobile, because they both had the powers where they would get the bonus to their armor class against opportunity attacks, and they both had really high armor classes to begin with. So I had them drawing opportunity attacks from movement almost every round, and very, very few of those opportunity attacks ever connected, which frustrated the players. And I played the monsters as getting more confident. Every time they moved, drew an opportunity attack that didn't connect, the creatures felt, you know, braver. So like you said, they certainly could have just locked everybody down, but that's been a big problem for my group. So I had them all fight in the first round, the second round, once all the monsters sort of came into the initial area. And then I had them all run away, and the party got angry. They're like, wait, where are they going? And so they had to give chase. But I had the monsters sort of flee at different intervals in the initiative. And I had one of the Hex Knights stay and try and lock down the group as best he could, while I had another Hex Knight who had taken a critical hit and was already bloodied. I had him leave. The Dark Creepers, again, they had managed to kill one pretty quickly. I had the other one pull back. I had the Assassin take off at the top of the first round because he rolled the highest in the initiative. So the party sort of had a good idea of what monsters they were going to face, but they had to chase them down through the dungeon, and it actually worked really well for once. Usually they just stay at the door and wait for the monsters to come to them, but this week they knew they had to try and save Hoshtar. They managed to find out that he was somewhere in this dungeon, and they took off after him.
That's true. You have a lot of ranged characters in your party, don't you?
Well, there's versatility. We have two rogues, and although they prefer to attack in melee, they both have – one guy has daggers and one guy has shurikens. So if they've got combat advantage, which the controller gives them almost every time, it doesn't matter. They're going to get that sneak dice either way.
Right.
They're certainly capable of defeating monsters from range, and often they will do that because, I mean, who are we kidding? That's a good tactic. You know, if you're far away from the monster and the monster doesn't have ranged attacks, well – that's just smart playing. I have to admit, I actually made a mistake. I ran this encounter twice, and for some reason, I thought that the Hex Knights were drow. Both times when I ran the encounter, I played them as drow. I didn't change any of the stats, though. I ran them exactly as printed. And you would think that when I got to the Shadow Hex power and the Dark Step power and the fact that they explode just like the Dark Creepers, like, you'd think that would have clued in. No. I thought they were drow. I used drow minis. I called them drow. I described them as drow. It wasn't until after I'd completed both encounters, and I was talking to one of the other DMs, and he had mentioned something about it, and it sort of, the little light went off in my head, and I'm like, oh man, am I ever stupid? We all make mistakes. I mean, I guess partly for me, I didn't understand why these Dark Creepers were there. Like, it didn't make sense to me that there wouldn't be more drow in the lower level. So I guess in my mind, it was like, you've got this assassin, and he's got a couple of knights backing him up. Oh, and by the way, they brought in a couple of these little sneaky creeper dudes. So,
yeah,
that made more sense to me.
That was odd. I mean, through any adventure that we've had in the last two seasons, drow, 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 and all of a sudden, you get into this drow stronghold, and there's hex knights?
Yeah, like, I mean, in some of the previous, in the last season, there was a couple of encounters where they had goblins or kobolds or, you know, creatures that you would normally associate as slaves of the drow.
Right.
And that's not to say that the drows wouldn't enslave Dark Creepers. Like, hell, the drow would enslave anyone they feel is less powerful than they are. But, I mean, it just seemed bizarre to me. In my other group, the group that is actually level 2, I had the correct map this time. Because I played at two different stores, so I had the correct map, and I had reviewed the notes that were posted on the forums, and using the suggestion that was provided, there's the initial door that's there. Assuming, Mark, you're going to be able to post the map this week?
Yeah.
Yeah, so if you look on the map, the door by where the D and the H are initially placed, the suggestion on the forums was, make that into a portcullis and have it open initially. And when the assassin leaves, have him run down those stairs and then, like, flip a lever and drop the portcullis. And that way the heroes either spend a round to open the portcullis. Like, it's not going to be a difficult check. It's just going to require a move action, which will basically stop them. Or they can run around the long way. And then what you do is, in the top right corner, you have a couple of those Dark Creepers waiting there to ambush them. And I thought, you know what, this is beautiful. And then in the meantime, you have the two Hex Knights in the library flanking the opening. And then by then, hopefully, the assassin has gotten back to the library. So that's exactly what I did. They managed to – a couple of the guys managed to get hits in on the assassin before he got to go in the initiative. Then he took off, flipped the switch, dropped the portcullis, and they didn't see him again for, like, you know, 10 more rounds. And a couple of them stopped at the door. Couple of them took off to go around the long way. The party split themselves nicely. I had a couple of the Dark Creepers go. Now, with the lower level group, the level 2 group, last week, two of the senior wizards, as soon as they got bloodied, left the fight because the party was getting destroyed, and it didn't seem to me, based on how it was playing out, that the wizards, being intelligent, would have stuck around. So I had those wizards in the fight this week at exactly their hit point count where they were last week, which was just below their bloody value.
Oh my god, I totally forgot about that. That's brilliant.
Yeah, and so, like, they only had, like, about, I think, 15 hit... Yeah, I got it here. Their bloody value was 17, so I had them both start at 15 hit points. So basically 2 hits and they were down. Well, if the party got a short rest, the monsters got a short rest. So their lightning web and counter power was back in effect. So the blast five, they split themselves up. One wizard took the top. One wizard took the bottom. Boom, boom. Got them all.
Immobilized.
Well, I missed. I missed on the top wizard missed three guys. So they all just took the five damage. The other wizard, I think, only hit the one guy. And he was a ranged attacker. I think he hit their wizard, so it didn't really make a difference. But, you know, it was sort of insult to injury. And then they were silly enough to get up close to him, so he used his cattle prod and just, you know, just kept poking them and pushing them away. Oh, and then they opened the portcullis, and one of the guys ran through. But by then, the group at the top was having so much trouble with the dark creepers, they were calling for help. So the party all ended up in that top corridor except for the one guy. Well, that was where the wizard was. He used the cattle prod to push him back and then close the portcullis again. So I was like, well, if you guys aren't going to make any effort to keep it open. So, no, it worked really well.
What's the rule of thumb in this? Always carry a piton.
Yeah, for sure. Or take an act, like even a minor action where someone had said, is there a catch, is there a lever, is there some way I can keep it open or a lock or something? I would have been like, yeah, for sure. Nope, nobody even thought to say that. They're just like, all right, it's open. We go through. Oh, no, wait, we go back. Okay, they flip the switch. Down it goes. I didn't make the check to open it hard at all. I think I made it like a 10 or an 11. So, you know, they had about a 50-50 to open. I told them, I said, if two guys work together, you don't even need to make a check. You open it, but you both have to expend a move action. I said, if one guy's going to do it, move action, make the check. I mean, their fighter had like a +9 athletics. Like, you know, he was going to make that check on just about every roll. But no, it worked well.
Nice.
The that party though, they ended up in some trouble, and it was almost a TPK. So they had a party of six. Three of the characters ended up unconscious and ended up with their throat slit. So three of them were dead. Actually, no, two of them I had throat slit. One of the guys failed three death saves, and at some point in the encounter. Every character was unconscious at some point, like, and three of the characters rolled 20s to come back into the fight. The one guy, unfortunately, he rolled a 20. He had no healing surges, so he comes back with one hit point. Then he got killed by friendly fire. The party was getting destroyed, and the wizard, who had also just made his death save, rolled a 20. He's like, I'm going to drop my daily, the Fountain of Flame. And it's all creatures in the blast zone. I think it's 3d8 plus his intelligence mod, and it does half on a miss. Well, the guy only had one hit point, so he was dead either way.
Nice.
But he's like, no. He even said to the player, he's like, you've got to do it. It makes the most sense. And I mean, the player ended up hitting all three. He hit the two monsters and the player, did the full damage, and yeah, that was sort of the attack that turned the tide. But they had a tough go of it, but everybody had a lot of fun.
No, that's awesome. We had the Arcanist that actually just jumped up and did something stupid also and got taken down by the Hex Blades in two hits. But anyway, I digress. So yeah that was your second level table, right? And you're the one. So how did you end up dealing with Hoshtar at the end? I know that the module called for Hoshtar, the assassin having a dagger to Hoshtar's throat and saying, "You guys take one more step forward," and I slit his throat.
Yeah, so I handled it a little bit differently for both groups. So going back to the very beginning of the encounter, the assassin is there and the party can talk to him. Neither of my groups talked to him for more than about a second. They asked him one question, you know, where's Hoshtar? And that was it. They didn't really care what he had to say. His whole thing about, oh, thank you for starting this war. Nobody really understood what that meant in the context of this guy. Like it was clear to me as the DM because I had read the adventure, but the players didn't. Like, none of them had enough information to really understand how and why that was even relevant. So they just went, screw it. We're here to find Hoshtar. We're doing it. So at the end, when with the first group, the one with the high-level characters, there was only four player characters. And they kept separating themselves as well. And so although I had the assassin run into the library at the beginning when one of the characters was sort of removed himself from the rest of the party and came to the door, like he never actually got into the library. He got to the threshold of the library. One of the Hex Knights who had been waiting, you know, jumped out and ambushed him and like brought him down pretty good. He didn't drop him, but he brought him down to like within a few hit points. And then And then, of course, being mobile, I had the guy run around him. Opportunity attack, missed, of course, and it took off. But I'm like, he yells to the assassin. He's like, there's a guy there. You know, one of the drow is right here, and he's really hurt. So that basically drew the assassin out of the library. And then the players managed to move their characters around the assassin in such a way that he just couldn't get back in the library. So that was sort of, you know, partly a fluke on the way that they worked the encounter, but partly it was the way I opted to have the assassin. Like, my feeling was if he could kill these guys and end the immediate threat, he would do that before he would just wait for them to show up and go, I'm going to kill Hoshtar. I got a knife to his throat.
Yeah, Hoshtar is probably worth a lot more to them alive than the party itself.
Yeah, and so once that party had killed all the opponents, Hoshtar was still unconscious. So I said to them, I'm like, if you guys want to – I'm like, Hoshtar is unconscious, and without treatment, he will die. You can leave him, and he will die, or you can kill him if you want to see him dead faster. I said, or you can revive him and go from there. And they talked about it for a couple of minutes, and then they're like, no, you know what? There's more to be gained by reviving him and potentially have him owe us a favor. Now, because they're all Brigadier, their secret objective was to basically frame House Malarn and put their insignia all over the dead dudes. So before they woke up Hoshtar, they continued to plant some of that stuff on the guys who had died in the lower level. And then when Hoshtar woke up, they basically sold him a lie. They're like, yeah, Hoshtar, what are you doing here? And he's like, oh, I came in under the false pretenses. And then they basically ambushed me right away. And he's like, I never really got a chance to look around. Who was in charge here? And they're like, well, you know, we hate to tell you, but it was House Malarn, and they screwed you over good. And he's like, what? You kidding me? And then they let him look around, and he saw the insignia, and they're like, holy crap, I never would have thought they would have been involved with this. They're like, yeah, this wasn't really the Council of Spires at all. It was the House Malarn, and they were trying to, you know, convince people to come here. And then once they're like, yeah, we'll join the Council of Spires, they were going to kill them. And he's like, oh my god, like, he's like, that's such a drow thing to do. He's like, wow, man, I got lucky I didn't get killed. And they're like, yeah, good thing for you, we showed up to rescue you. So I said, like, Hoshtar, when you guys go back, you're going to have to explain what happened. And the House of Malarn Priestess is going to want answers. What are you going to tell her? Are you going to tell her that her house is, you know, was guilty of this? Or are you going to keep that to yourselves? Because I'm like, Hoshtar is basically going to follow your lead. And they said, you know what? We're not going to say anything to her. We're going to keep that information in our back pocket. And if we need to pull it out later, we will. So they ended up, that's their plan when they're going to go back. So that should be it. And they came up with that idea on their own. I was very proud of them. With the low-level group, it was, same idea. The party was at a point where they were really close to being dead. Everybody was bloody. They only had a few hit points left. And the assassin has the ability to make two basic melee attacks in a given round. If like his power recharges on, I think, a 5 and a 6 or a 4, 5, and 6.
5, 6.
Yeah, and like my D6 was super hot. He was recharging it almost every time. But even when he doesn't, he's just 2d8 plus 4. Well, all the bloody characters, none of them could take that kind of damage. Like maybe once, but definitely not twice. So when he realized how hurt they were, again, I had him say, well, you know what? It makes more sense for him to join the combat and kill the intruders than it is for him to stand there and wait for them. So, I had him wait until all the other monsters were just about dead, and then he joined the fight. And he ended up getting slowed by one of the effects. And so that's when he's like, well, since he couldn't get to anybody else, he decided to slit throats.
Right.
And that's why a couple of those pieces. Normally, I don't do that. I find that's kind of a dirty DM trick. But I'm like, well, you guys are playing drow. This guy's drow. He would absolutely do it given the circumstances.
Right. Makes sense.
And even at one point when there was down to one guy was left alive, the assassin was like, Hoshtar's, and he kept taunting them. He's like, Hoshtar's not worth it. You guys should just leave, because he realized his guys were getting mowed down. And I gave the heroes a chance, the guys who were alive, I gave them a chance to leave, and they opted not to. And in the end, they ended up, you know, defeating them. But and that group didn't really get any information out of them at all. They didn't, they're just like, where's Hoshtar? And he's like, yeah, I've got him over here. You can come see him. And they're like, that's all we needed to hear. Boom. Jumped right into the fight.
Anybody lose worth this week?
Because
I heard some showing mercy, and I heard some.
The my high level group is really taking the worth seriously. They all have the treachery cards, and they do a lot of dirty backhanded things with the cards, which are actually a lot of fun. One of the ones, our druid controller, he rolled 4 crits this week, and his dice are usually pretty good, but 4 crits was amazing. And on his second crit, the drow priest, the woman who plays her, is usually pretty reserved. She's not a very vocal player. And all of a sudden, from out of nowhere, she's like, "I play this treachery card. Your crit is not a crit." And he's like, "What are you talking about?" She's like, "It's just a regular hit. Roll up the damage." And like, he was angry. And then she's like, "The second part of this card says that my next hit is automatically a crit." And so she pulled out a daily and used it on the assassin. And we're like, "Oh, good use of the card. Good use of the daily power." Like, it couldn't have played out any better.
Nice.
But yeah, with my high level group, because of the treachery cards, their worst scores are really getting good. With the other table, nobody's using the treachery cards, and I think only like two of the players are even bothered to track the worth, because most of them, their worth was so low at the beginning, they were like, you know what, this is even, like, the one guy's playing a human Brigadierith, and I think his starting worst score is like negative 20. So, you know, he's been tracking it pretty closely, but other than that, nobody has.
Wow. No, we've got nobody that's got a higher worth than 4 or 5 right now, because everybody's just kind of laying hands on the priestess all over the place, right? So she's getting slapped, she's getting attacked. I mean, it's well worth it. The tactics are working. She kind of seems to be getting in the way all the time, but yeah.
Well, the guy I was saying who's tracking the worth, the guy's playing the human in the all drow party, he had an opportunity to use a blast attack that would have attacked the three remaining monsters, including the assassin, at one point in the fight right near the end. But the unconscious priestess was right there, and she would have been affected because it's all creatures. And because he's so concerned about bringing his worst score up, he's like, "I absolutely would not do this in character." I mean, he goes, from a mechanics point of view, I totally should, but he's like, "I'm not going to." And so he didn't. And then the next round, the assassin slit the priestess's throat. So, like, she ended up dying anyway, but it wasn't at his hand, so he didn't lose worth for it. Mm. And I applauded his role-playing. I thought it was the right move for his character. But from a number-crunching point of view, it was kind of disappointing that he didn't do it, just because I think that would have ended the battle sooner, and some of the other characters might not have died. But you play in drow, that's the way it works.
Oh, exactly. Exactly. Who's this guy think he is anyway? Artemis and Tiri?
Yeah, he's got a really interesting build, because he took a feat where he's got, not dark vision, but he has like blind fighting. So when the drow globes of darkness pop up, he has like no penalties, which is pretty good, because I have my monsters use that all the time.
Isn't blind fighting just 5 feet? You have to move within range, so it says anything is adjacent to you that's invisible is visible, right?
Yeah, well, usually he's adjacent to, like, that's usually my trick when I'm running the drow monsters. I have them throw up the globe of darkness, and then they get combat advantage, and they just stab whoever's next to them with a +2. Or if they're guys like the skirmishers, then they get the extra dice. And even if the module printed says they have the dark fire, 9 times out of 10, I change it to globe of darkness, just because I find that one has more versatility.
Right.
Combat advantage, and the fact that you can just pop it up and walk away and not take opportunity attacks, like, that to me is a much better, and it doesn't need an attack roll, whereas the other one you need to make the attack roll to hit it. So
true.
But his build's kind of interesting. So in any case, once the encounter is over, so for your group, you're gonna do that role playing next week, right? You said you're gonna work that into next week's encounter.
Yeah, I'm gonna throw all the insights, the bluffs, like all the kind of treachery skills into it, so that basically, you know, assassin versus other people who can bluff him or insight him or kind of trick him into doing something that's just stupid. So that's what the skill challenge is going to be all about.
Yeah. Now, so at the end of this encounter, what's, as written in the adventure, what's supposed to happen is they either rescue Hoshtar or they find his remains, and then they're supposed to go back to Rokalar and the priestess Ashala, and then basically report, "This is what we found at the hideout." And then next week's encounter is essentially just role-playing, where the players have their characters, you know, explain what they've heard, and then try and convince the two or three, we'll call them leaders, what side of the fight they think they should come down on.
This sounds almost like a prelude to D&D Next, from when I played at Gen Con.
In a way, I mean, it's the way the encounter, like, I'll admit, we played ahead because I knew it was going to be a very short encounter. I just tacked it on to the end of this one for my advanced group because they're not able to play next week. So it only took about a half an hour. And the problem with these all role play, no combat ones is the players that are very outgoing, sort of alpha personalities, usually have no problem with it. The players who are more reserved, a little more shy, even if they're playing characters with 20 charisma and super high diplomacy scores, they're just, that's not their personality type, and they tend to not be as engaged. And that's exactly what I saw happen at my table. You know, the two people that like to be the talkers of the group, even though their characters have crappy charismas, they're the ones who had all the talk. And the other characters were like, well, can I make a diplomacy check? I have a plus 12. It's like, well, yeah, you can, but you know, you should try and get into it more. And it was really confusing. We'll talk more about it next week, but I like your approach of using the freeing Hoshtar as the beginning of next week's and then rolling that all in. I think that's going to work really well for your group.
Yeah, I think it'll make for a nice little session. I'll give you guys some feedback next week about how it worked.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing on the forum sort of what people suggest for how to tweak next week's encounter. But again, we'll worry about that next week. So just one last thing then for this week. The reward for characters that played at 450 experience points, 60 gold pieces per character, and characters find two random magic items in the library. And on one of the in addition, one of the dead drow carried a plus one staff of striking or another equivalent magic item. And the plus one staff of striking... I mean, if you've got a wizard who's a staff guy and doesn't have an item, this is fantastic. If for no other reason than it does a plus 1d8 on a crit instead of plus 1d6 on a crit. But, you know, it's fat loots, right? This is so potentially three magic items out of this week's encounter. So
does the staff itself give a 2d10 or 1d10 or whatever it was that they were doing, the insane amount of damage they were doing?
No, the idea, from what I understand here, it talks in the description of the library that was provided earlier in the encounter here. It talks about how there were, what does it say? There were a couple of other dead wizards in that room.
Right.
On the floor in front of the table is Hoshtar, bound, gagged, and heavily beaten. The corpses of two other male drows dressed in wizard's robes lie beneath the table. It sounds like it's supposed to be one of those other two wizards had this staff.
Oh, okay.
So someone you actually encountered in the battle. But the encounter next week, there is an outside chance of combat depending on how the role play works. Like, basically, if the group can't come to terms, you potentially come to blows. But I think most groups are going to find that they are able to convince the three leaders of the three groups to go one way or the other. And if that's the case, there's no combat. So I know with my group, for both of my groups, they have no resources left. The ones that survived have like no healing surges, and they all have used all their best, most powerful powers. So in a way, it's kind of good that there's no expectation for combat next week. So we'll see. We'll see how it plays out.
Should have thrown a drider into the mix.
It's funny, the two characters that got killed dead, or one of the two characters that got killed dead this week, someone said that. They're like, you should bring your character back as a drider. Like, yeah, well, let's talk about that next week.
Nice. All right, anything else to add?
No, I think I'm good. I mean, this is a short adventure. We're already past the halfway point. There's only three more encounters to go. And I'm kind of curious to see how it plays out and how it finishes. We should be getting the next season of D&D Encounters in the next couple of weeks. So looking forward to seeing where we go from here.
I'm looking forward to it also. All right. Well, until next week, Derek. And this concludes this week's session, Session 5 of D&D Encounters, Season 10, Council of Spiders, Secrets and Lies.
You can follow me on Twitter at @Amaron_DM, and be sure to visit dungeonsmaster.com for original D&D 4th edition material, including a weekly field report of my D&D Encounters experiences.
And follow me on Twitter at @20foot, and visit 20footradius.blogspot.com for your weekly dose of D&D Encounters. That's 20footradius, 20ft, radius.blogspot.com. Until then, have a blast.